ANZ Voices welcomes you to the Business of Bluntstock podcast with Tim Rowe and Charmaine Bukovec.
Welcome to the second episode of the Business of Bluntstock podcast, where I, Tim Rowe, is recording this solo as my co-host, Charmaine Bukovec, is on her way back from the Gold Coast to the Hunter Valley via Melbourne. Work that out. Must be the Irish in her. But anyway, before we departed the Gold Coast, in this episode, we speak to Barry Bowditch to recap the Magic Million sale, where more than $243 million changed hands. And in our Share and Success segment, proudly brought to you by Avesta Bloodstock, we catch up with Crestfield studs Michelle Bedgood, who endured more than a few headaches before her prized Extreme Choice colt was sold to Bennett Racing for $310,000 on day one. Of course, the Magic Millions is just the start of the sales season, with the circuit next week heading to New Zealand for the Karaka National Sale, which is back to its traditional late January time slot. But before then, tune in now to hear our insights and a few tales from Barry and Michelle. We hope you enjoy this week's Business of Bloodstock podcast.
Horse fitness. Industry-specific online education platforms. For the many, not the few. Horse fitness. Doing the heavy lifting. Early bird sponsorship packages are available now. Mention ANZ Podcast for a further 5% off the package you sign up for. Align your brand with our solution. To find out more, visit www.horse.fitness.
We've got Barry Bowditch on our second edition of the Business of Bloodstock podcast. Welcome, Barry.
Thank you, Tim. Lovely to be with you.
It's been the January sale, it's a marathon, but it's over in a flash at the same time. There's been, you know, we'll certainly touch on what's happened at the sale. It's been, I would say, successful in my eyes. But before that, there was some big announcements and it was made at the Polo. Can you go through what that means and, you know, for the sales and the race day and what will be happening from 2024 onwards?
Really excited by this. It's something I've been working on basically since last year. Obviously, last year we created some new initiatives or new innovations in having the new $1 million syndicate and the $500 million debut. And off the back of that, we thought, let's continue to take it to a new level. And, you know, Jerry's dream and Katie's dream was let's try and recreate a $20 million day. So off the back of that, race in Queensland and Magic Millions went away. We've looked to bring some new races to life and also enhance some of our existing races that are champions of what we do here each year. So in 2024, the 2 and 3 odd races will increase to $3 million, which is an increase of $1 million on both of those races, which it's needed to keep up with what's going on in this sport, whether it be the Golden Slipper or the Blue Diamond. They're seeing increases. So the Stradbroke's up to $3 million, and in our eyes, the best two races in Queensland are our two races, the 2 and 3 odd races. So we need to remain relevant and at the top of the tree, and we're excited to be again, when you include the Race and Women Bonus, the two richest races in Queensland. On top of that, next year we'll have a new maiden. We're going to have two divisions of the maiden, which will be run over most likely 1,000 metres and 400, both 1,400, both worth $250,000. And then we'll also invest another $500,000 into a two-year-old race, which we're still brainstorming, but that money's guaranteed for 2024. So Magic Millions 2024 will be 11 races worth $14.25 million. Then in 2025, that's where it gets really exciting. I think over the week, there'll be some 18 Magic Millions races, three races on Wave Day, and then we'll go to six races on the night session, the new Friday Night Lights. So Friday night, during the sale, before our big day, we'll have six races. It'll be an absolutely outstanding evening. It'll be the richest night race meeting in this part of the world, with the richest race run under lights, which will be a $3 million slot race for all comers. It'll be for three-year-olds over 1,100 metres. So I guess it's sort of replicating what happens in Victoria with the Coolmore Classic and taking that to a new level for Queensland. And obviously, I think it'll be really a compliment. Racing Queensland, we spoke to them a lot about it, and it complements their program perfectly. So that's something we're really excited about. And then the next day, we'll run another nine races, which will include the big $3 million two-year-old classic and the $3 million classic. So over those 24 hours, there'll be $20 million in prize money.
How will the sale fit around with the night meeting on the Friday night? Obviously, at the moment, you've got a Saturday night selling session. Would the Friday be slightly shorter day, or have you thought that far ahead?
Yeah, we're still working through that. My thoughts at the moment is that, it'll be a very fun Friday night, so it'll be a very casual experience. It won't be the upmarket experience we create on the Saturday, but we'll start something like at 6:30, so I'm guessing it'll be a reduced Friday session, just maybe by an hour, but it won't change things too much.
I guess for those that have probably been to the Crack a Million, I know it's a rival company, but that one very good thing that NZB, the Crack a Million night, is sensational. Everyone goes to, I guess, could be modelled a little bit on that.
Yeah, definitely. I think using something like that as a blueprint, you're always looking at what's happening in other racing jurisdictions around the world, but I don't think there'll be too much comparable to what those 2 days will present, not only the public, but our participants. Obviously, our participants are investing a lot of money during that week on horses, and I think being able to put that amount of money back in their pockets over that short period of time is really important to the game, and I think the feedback since we announced it some 8 days ago has been nothing short of phenomenal.
The one change that new race that sort of took my eye and I thought was achievable, there's 1,000 horses sold here this week, or been sold here at the Gold Coast, and every one of them's a Magic Millions 2-year-old contender until they've proven otherwise, but the winter 2-year-old national race, 1,000 metres, $1 million, for those that aren't quite ready, you can target that and still live the dream.
Exactly. I think we have an important sale in the winter. We have an important weanling, broodmare, yearling sale. It's the largest of any kind in this part of the world. So to be able to dovetail in around that and have a $1 million race for Magic Millions 2-year-olds only, it's been something we've been thinking about for a long time, and we're finally being able to brainstorm that and be able to have it on the Gold Coast here on a Friday night, probably post broodmare sale, before the yearling sale, the eve of the derby. I think it's going to go over very, very well from an industry perspective. Obviously, from a participant level, it's a little bit more casual in the winter, so having them up here enjoying the Gold Coast and being able to go to a high level race meeting that I feel, whether it be Racing Queens or the Gold Coast Turf, will have a great undercard for, will be something that will work very, very well in the winter.
Barry, thank you for that insight. The sale, again, this year has gone from strength to strength. It just seems to continue to set records. Tell us about how the sale's been for Magics.
Yeah, we've been very excited. In the promotion of this sale issue, we thought we had an extremely strong catalogue. We're very confident in what the vendors provide us to sell, and that's where it starts, to be able to go out to our buyers and put our hand on our heart and say, this is the best colour we'll put together. It was something that made our job quite easy. Well, not easy, but it made it pleasurable to have these two conversations, because we genuinely believed in the product we had. And I think that was evident in the sale results. To be selling close to now 90% of book one, to have an average of a record average of just below 300,000, and to have a gross that's almost at 230 million is a great result for the team, a great result for the company. And I think we've broken barriers that we've found difficult to break regularly in the past, having four $2 million yearlings and a record new price of 2.7, and the next two prices would have been records any other year in the past. It's a great result, and I think it gives vendors the faith that they can bring their very best yearlings here, and there is no ceiling in our marketplace here. We sold obviously four yearlings above 2 million. We sold a cumulative the most amount of horses we've ever sold above $1 million, the most horses we've ever sold above $500,000. So the strength in the high end of the market was really, really strong. But when you have a catalogue of 979 horses, it's important that we can fulfill all ends of the market. And when you're basing yourself on a clearance rate of close to 90%, I believe we've achieved that again in 2023.
And we obviously talked a little bit about the announcements then, but we've had some major announcements recently. Do you think that's helped the strength of a sale?
I think, when you've got confidence in the investment that the sales company or the PRA are making, it's got to help. Like, Australia's the envy of the world. What have we got? Some $80 plus million races in Australia. We race for huge prizes. prize money week in, week out, all over the country. So our participants, they should be confident in the product that's on offer, because there's so many riches to be raised for week in, week out.
And we do have a question here, but could the sale become a victim of its own success?
Look, you know, our preface is to ensure that we're giving the vendors confidence. We've got buyers at all levels. So, one thing we don't want to become is an elite sale. We want to continue to be a sale for the people, for the syndicators, for the trainers, and give people an entry point or a budget line that they come with confidence and spend money at any level. And we'll continue to do our best to achieve that, sale in, sale out, whether it be here on the Gold Coast or any of our sales in the country.
The sales companies, figureheads yourself and Sebastian and your peers at NZB, tend to use the trade publications, particularly ANZ, like I think, just to send a message to the buyers and the vendors before the sale, quite often try to talk the sale down, just to, especially when there's a lot of anticipation. But before this sale, economically, interest rates are going up and there's a bit of pessimism, but not from you. Where'd the confidence come from that you were really excited and confident that there would be strong activity? What made you take that position, I guess, before the sale particularly?
I think we had two good lines. I think our vendor support gave us the confidence we had the best product we've ever had to offer. And that gave me the confidence that we could be confident stepping forward that buyers need to turn up here and participate in the best product they're going to find in 2023. On the other hand, this is a sale we book one each year. Some 300 horses make, below $150,000. So, value is still to be found here. It's not as if it's a sale for the elite buyer only. And as much as I was very confident in the sale, we were still playing the market. There is value to be found. Like, six of our best Group 1 winners in recent time have been sold here for $150,000. And that was a strong message, as well as the confidence I had in the product we were here to sell.
We talked again records, but the sale was one for milestones. We had obviously some vendors achieve great results, some stallions as well, again, achieve those great results. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think it's great to see new vendors actually participating in our market, firstly, or coming here with confidence to sell horses here, and secondly, having great sales. Like, there's no better thing than a first-time vendor like Michael Christian and Siobhan Miller and their clients coming here and having $1 million result their first sale here. That's fantastic, and it's very well deserved given the fact they've invested so heavily in the broodmare market in recent times. But I don't want to identify one or two results, because I could pull the results sheet out and go, how good a result was that? How good a result was that? There was so many great results. It's pleasing. And this sale's not about any one or two vendors. I think there was a huge spread of money spent all over our vendors. I think Newgate grossed some $17 million for the sale. When you pull that into a percentage, they're not dominating the market as such. It's a big, big spread. The amount of vendors that would have grossed over $5 million would be a huge number, and it would be not seen at many other sales anywhere in this part of the world.
And I think that's key. The investment that comes in from all angles is amazing. And we did see some new investment from the Rigney family in America. How did you manage to entice them to Magic Millions?
Yeah, well, I've got to thank a great mate of mine, John Moynihan, for that. He introduced me to them late last year. We had a few drinks at the Breeders' Cup in their box at the Breeders' Cup, and I got to know Rich and Tammy quite well there, and they were great fun. You could tell they had a great passion for racing. Thankfully enough, they were coming down. They were coming down to take their kids on holidays and go to Lizard Island scuba diving, and thought, why don't we tie in a horse so while we're here? And they got down here. We looked after them extraordinarily well. They had great hospitality, but on top of that, they just enjoyed the vibe, the atmosphere. They got a great understanding of the prize money here in Australia, and it was something that Tammy was like, well, this racing women, Magic Men's racing women, this is really cool. This is something we don't see anywhere else in the world. We should get behind it. And I'm thrilled that they participated in the market, but I'm also thrilled that they took two of the marquee fillies of the sale home, and fingers crossed that in years to come we can have them back here on the Gold Coast, obviously enjoying the sale, but hopefully having success at the race meeting.
And I guess we talk about increased investment in Australia all the time, because we are such a strong jurisdiction, but I guess for those people listening at home who might not see what you guys do behind the scenes, how do you entice new investment to come to the sales? Like, what are you doing when you're overseas and things like that?
I think relationships key, getting over there, speaking to them. And, you know, it's all about, you know, people having faith in what you're doing and your product. So getting to know them, becoming, you know, friends with them or getting their trust is important. So, you know, travelling the world and enjoying what they do in their part of the world is important. And, you know, Magic Millions does their best to travel to most places in the world and get to know these people. And, you know, you're not always going to get everyone you want to a sale, but you do your best to provide our market, our vendors, with the best lot of international buyers that we possibly can.
On America, obviously, Australia's had a lot of investment from America for a long time, and there's SF Bloodstock involved with Newgate and the Colts Fund that they run, and we had Spendthrift for 5, 6, 7 years. Untapped mightn't be the right description, but is there a lot of, you know, Rigneys over there that could come down or start showing interest that, you know, the next 3 or 4 years that you'll entice to the Australian market?
Absolutely. It's a big world out there. It's a big country, America, you know, in particular America. And, you know, I think they've got a great passion for racing and you know, getting them to, you know, compliment what they're doing in America and come down here and enjoy Australia is something that we're trying to entice them to do. And there's many in America up there that's looking at Australia and I think are on the verge of participating, and whether it be, you know, Richard and Tammy Rigney or Barbara Bankey or what Spendthrift achieved here, or now we've got, you know, the Wolfs, Jack and Laurie Wolf through Starlights, and obviously SF Bloodstock have been a pillar of America from our perspective for quite a long time. It's something that, you know, I think there's many more. There's a plethora out there that we can keep enticing to come down here. And, you know, if you get one or two a year, as we saw this week, it makes a big difference to the auction.
Is there, we've seen Australian buyers go up to the Broodmare sales up there, and you're the Keeneland rep and Fazy Tipton as well. Seems the bloodline seems to mix very well, and vice versa as well. Could that add to the appeal, I guess, of the investment both ways?
Exactly. I think speed's very relevant to both countries. I think we breed for speed here, they breed for speed in America, and we're both very, very successful, the world leaders at that. So, you know, America in particular, we complement each other so well. You know, a lot of our best breeders go to America each year to invest in American broodmare, to bring back, to complement the strong, potent Australian bloodline lines we have in our size. So, look, you can see on the racetrack each year, that's working extremely well. The consistency and the results on the racetrack are very strong for the small pool of American mares that are here. And I think it's working the other way. Look, you look at Bounding that went up to America and the sale results she's had, and there's been many others that have had successful results up there as well. It works well both ways, and I really enjoy American racing. I enjoy the people up there, and to have the opportunity to you know, go up there 2 or 3 times a year does give me a great pathway to enjoy spending great time with some of our American clients.
A live podcast from Keeneland and the Breeders' Cup 2023 sounds fun, Charmaine.
It does, Tim. That might be a notice for our head office there. Tim, you wanted to carry on to here?
Yeah, obviously, sadly, you know, on the 6th of January news came through that the iconic figure Sir Patrick Hogan had died, and across Australasia he left an indelible mark through just himself, but obviously with Sir Tristram and his son Zabeel, and Barry, you've been following and involved in the industry for, you know, 20 plus years. What's your recollection of Sir Patrick?
Oh, he's an absolute icon of the sport worldwide. What he's done, his investment, his success, and the way he's handled himself over a huge period of time is massive. And what he's done for Cambridge and for New Zealand in particular is something that will never be forgotten. And, I've got to say, I think, you know, when you look back at some of the legends of the breeding game, Sir Patrick's name will be at the top forever and a day.
It's time to take on the business of Bloodstock Fast Five.
On a lighter note, we're going to finish off with our Fast Five. Tim and I are going to take, I don't know if I've been given the better question first or if Tim's got the better question second, we'll see. Right, your father was a trainer, your father-in-law is a retired Group 1 winning trainer. Doesn't your pedigree say you should be a trainer?
Yeah, I can't get up that early in the morning to train horses. So it was something, you know, I had aspiration of doing, and you know, while I was even here at Magic Millions in the early days, I thought, oh, I might become a horse trainer, but seriously, early mornings, and I'm very fortunate to be in the position I am, and I think I'm far better off to do what I'm doing than train horses.
Absolutely, I've seen you entertaining late at night, gets those buyers here, and you're very, very good at that, so don't change
that.
Right?
Yeah.
Interestingly, you said obviously the Sunlight Sister sold for $2.6 million on last Wednesday, and you said you'd been thinking about it nearly every day for 5 months, and you also suggested that the Old Invincible Booker colt was the best horse you'd ever seen walk onto a yearling sale. If you could only pick one and take a share in one of them, which one would it be?
Ooh. I'll go the Booker colt, because if you get it right, you could be very, very wealthy.
Always a commercial business sense, I love it. Our next question is, if you could have three people over for dinner, dead or alive, who would they be?
That's a really good question. I'd say Vin Cox, he's one of my great mates. I would definitely say my wife.
You're a very good husband. Very good husband.
Definitely my wife. She should have come first. Sorry, Vin.
Well, I feel like she's hosting. So right. You and her are hosting. So right. Vin, who else?
Look, Bob Baffert. I've spent a bit of time with him at the dinner table. He's a great host. He's an outstanding man, a great orator. I'd have him. And look, you know, you probably got to mix up the dynamic and have a female. I really enjoy Zara Phillips's company. She's good fun, loves a drink, and if she comes, she's got to bring Mike Tyndall, so it'll be just a great night in all. Yeah.
Sounds like a good party. I'm sure Tim and I, our invitation won't be too far behind.
I know your colleague David Chester hasn't taken holidays for 3 decades, but when you go on holiday, what's your favourite holiday destination?
Well, firstly, David, if he retires, is at risk of sending the company broke, or he's annual leave is accrued. So, when I go on holiday, it's somewhere where I can enjoy a lot of time with the family. Obviously, June's the best time to go away, so a nice warm island's always first on the agenda.
Now, this final one doesn't have to be a sale result. It could be a funny story or something that just sticks out in your mind, but what is your favourite sale memory of all time?
Favourite sale memory of all time?
Could also be Moo Moo's after the sale or...
This is a really good question that I'm flagging through my memory right now to go through. Like, back at Inglis's, those guys put so much crap on me. Like, day in, day out, they'd have me doing things that, like, Vin, Richard Haynes, Jonathan Darcy, Dean Harvey, they just loaded me with so much crap. So, you know, it wasn't a sales thing, but I remember there was a Coke machine there, and I worked out how to get the Coke out. We put one in, and you get as many Cokes as you like, you jam the buns up, and get them, and they just keep pouring out. So, anyway, Vin thought it was hilarious, but he thought he'd played on me, so he went and sort of said to Reg, look, you know, can you pull Barry in and say how he's robbing off the company, and this isn't called for, and this needs to stop. And that was probably one of the more serious conversations I thought I was having that was actually having the piss taken out. So that was a good funny memory. But, you know, I've worked with some great people over the years and had some fun times at the sale. So, you know, the story's endless. The auction stories are endless. You know, I could go on all day and, you know, you could talk to any of our auctioneers and there'd be some very, very memorable moments over what's now been 22 years working at the auctions.
I think that wraps it up. Barry, appreciate allowing us to be here again for massive Magic Millions sale and the second episode of Business of Bloodstock podcast.
Good night, it's been great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Barry. Perfect.
A share in success, shining a spotlight on ownership success stories with Avesta Bloodstock.
For this week's share in success, Tim and I are joined by Michelle Bedgood, who bred Lot 69, a colt by extreme choice, out of the mare Little Knickers. We hear about her share in success on the next segment.
For you to get such a big result personally on early in the sale, how did you feel about that? How did it make you feel?
I was ecstatic, and I admit that I was in tears. I was not expecting that. We were hoping to get a reasonable price, but being by extreme choice, we knew that there could be the opportunity to make a fair bit, but to get what we did was surprising.
you've sold, you know, through Pressfield some lovely horses, high prices. Why were you so emotional about that horse in particular?
He was a stressful horse to get to the sales, knowing that he was by Extreme Choice as well, which, as obviously he's on fire at the moment, it was one of those rare opportunities to produce something and hopefully, you know, that he goes on and be something very special.
Why was it such a stressful experience for that horse? Is it the value, or was he a bit uptight, or getting, you know, things can go wrong with horses?
He was actually a little turd, if I can say that.
Yeah.
He was quite a handful, but his manners came in later. But he was, knowing that he could be an expensive horse, and worrying that if he gets an injury or something like that, just that stress of knowing that he's got to pass the scope, he's got to pass the x-rays, all of that, that made it one of the most stressful horses that I've ever sold.
When he got to the sale, did you start to relax a little bit, or were you still, you know, things can go wrong, kick the box, or, you know, come cast in the box?
No, until that hammer dropped, I was very, very stressed out about it all. I was actually in tears before he went through the ring, because he'd made it and he was actually going to be sold.
What's, obviously the market thought he was quite a lovely horse. Do you have that, obviously got that belief in him that he can go on and be a good horse?
I think he can. His damn little knickers, she had, oh, I can't remember how many starts now, but just in her first four starts, she had 3/3, and she won her fourth start by 7 lengths. And she did show, you know, that she had a bit of talent, but unfortunately she was injured and had to be retired eventually.
Michelle, Little Knickers is a horse close to your heart. She was originally in your 2016 draft at Crestfield, but was subsequently withdrawn. Tell us about how that came about and how you end up racing her.
Okay. She actually had a virus, and she had quite a high temp, so we ended up having to keep her, and we decided then that we'd race her rather than sell her privately. We then put a few of our friends into her, and yeah, we've raced her since. We raced her, and that's a shared ownership. But we were very lucky originally to get her, the dam Nikki Rena. We had a phone call from Greg Bennett, who we owe a lot to, and offered us to go in 50-50 with him and race her. And we proceeded to race her, and then we got Little Knickers from her eventually.
And roughly, what was your share percentage in the Knickers when you raced her?
37%.
Nice round share.
Yes.
And obviously for Greg, people will know Greg, you know, trained clearly innocent for Bruce Neal, the owner of Crestfield.
Yes, he did. He did very well with Clearly Innocent, and as I said, we're very grateful to him for many things.
So as we mentioned, the lot that you sold was a colt by Extreme Choice out of Little Knickers. How did that mating come about, Michelle?
We were very lucky. We were offered the opportunity to go to Extreme Choice by someone, and ultimately, after doing a bit of thinking, knowing that he did have some fertility issues, we decided to go to him. Well, I decided to go to him, and the rest was history. It did take two covers, but we did get our foal out of it, our colt, so very happy with that.
Yeah, at that time he wasn't proven, you know, he's a superstar stallion now, his stats are through the roof. Once you knew you had a mare and foal and Stay Inside came out and Tiger of Malay, what were you starting to think then?
We were actually starting to think that we had something very good. We knew that with all these horses, well, not all, with these horses coming out that were proving, you know, very talented, that we were hoping that we had something that would be worth a little bit when it went to sale. And as you see, we've been very lucky. He kicked on, his stakes produced horses compared to what he's put on the ground is just amazing, and hopefully it continues.
And the colt, as you mentioned, obviously, the colt, as you mentioned, had a phenomenal result in the sale for you. He was knocked down for $310,000 to Bennett Racing. Did you expect that at the time?
No, nowhere near that amount. I honestly was quite shocked. We all were.
so shocked you did end up crying. So I'm going to ask you,
yes.
When the hammer came down, what was your reaction and what was going through your mind?
My reaction was, yes, crying. Just saying, I can't believe this, I can't believe this. And ultimately, I was thinking about the other owners in the horse as well, because there are two other owners in it and it's their first time selling. First time ownership, so to have that result for them was just amazing. And yeah, I was really happy for everybody that's in the syndicate, so it was great.
That's right, you touch on that. There's a catalogue, with book two, there's about 1200 horses here, and everyone thinks, great, you know, sell at the Magic Millions. But getting a horse in the sale isn't that easy.
No, it's not. We actually sold one last year, which was in the book two, which was out of Nicky Rain. It was the last one, and he's now racing, called Satellite Spirit. And that was an amazing result as well, because I was hoping for, you know, probably 70, and he got 170. So you never know what can happen.
You get the obviously, when you get paid out, you can, a lot of people reinvest in mares and things like that. You're going to keep a little bit aside to maybe treat yourself?
Yes, I'll probably do a couple of overseas trips when we sort of can really travel again. One to maybe Ireland and one to definitely France and Japan.
Can you explain why Ireland in particular?
Well, I'm hoping that two of our very good friends are going to be married.
I don't think that's going to be you, Tim, as of now.
No.
Unless Tanya doesn't know about something.
No, I'm already...
Now, there was a little story about when you were full of emotion up on the box that someone gave you a piece of advice about crying.
Don't cry. No.
was that someone who turned around and said, we don't cry? What was... I believe it was Mick Tilty.
Oh, we don't cry in the box. Yeah, that's a bit hard when you get that sort of a result.
Well, it is an amazing result, but I guess that you are surrounded by an amazing amount of success, and this is something, this horse you have really bred with your... It was your decision to go to Extreme Choice, not a Crestfield choice or anything like that. How does it feel to have such an amazing success story when it's all you're doing?
Amazing. I honestly never thought I'd be in this position. I've always dreamt of it. Hopefully we can keep going with a few more, and little Nickers kicks on with her foals, and they all start to produce something very, very nice. We're giving her every opportunity. We've put... she has an all too hard on the ground, and she's in foal to graph. So fingers crossed.
Very nice. I'm sure there'll be a lot more to come.
Yeah, obviously... Crestfield, Bruce Neal, as we touched on before, the times I've dealt with him, very sort of modest man. What is he? He doesn't chase the spotlight. What's he like to work for?
Wonderful. He's a very easy man to get along with and makes my job very, very easy. I've been working in the office now for over 15 years. So we often see him up at the stud, well, except for when COVID hit, but he enjoys his time up at the stud. He comes up for a visit, sees his horses and everything, and you don't even realise half the time that he's there, because he's just in the background, lets everybody do their job and doesn't interfere in anything.
The model that Bruce has employed, quality over quantity, pretty much at every of the major chairmans and Magic Million sales, he's at least bought one really high quality mare off the track. Do you feel the pressure knowing, walking through the paddocks going, geez, that's out of a, Pippi and, all these other great mares that he's got on the farm?
Definitely you do, because you know that progeny that's on the ground can be worth a lot of money. When they're born, literally you can go out and see this foal and you go, that's a cracker, that'll be a great, yearling for Easter or Magic Millions or whatever, but as soon as you say those Magic Millions and Easter, that they're worth a lot of money, so it can be scary.
What about, of course, as we know, not everything goes to plan. What about when a foal is born and you have to deliver bad news to Bruce? Does he take that okay?
He handles it extremely well. He knows that things happen and it can't be helped. He takes it on and just says, we have to just move on. Obviously, he gets very disappointed and upset, that he's lost a foal or a mare or whatever happens, but he understands the industry and he understands these things can happen.
Rightio, Michelle. Before we let you go, we are going to play a little game that Tim and I have coined up called Fast Five. So we're not going to throw you any curveballs, but we're kind of asking these of all our guests, aren't we, Tim?
Yeah,
not the same ones, though, but different ones.
Yeah, we'll just change around and see if we can find out a little bit more
draw
about
out
people.
Something else. Yeah. So first question, we'll alternate Tim and I. If you could dine with anyone for dinner, dead or alive, who would it be?
Chris Hemsworth.
Did you see him at the he was at the polo on Sunday?
No, I didn't see him, unfortunately. I didn't get there.
That's unfortunate.
You might have to get him to come out.
Yeah, maybe the polo next year and
VIP. Yeah, all that, yeah.
How did you celebrate the success that night after selling the colt?
We actually went out to dinner with Charmaine and Connor. We went and had Japanese and enjoyed a very large bottle of sake.
Fantastic.
I will confirm I did not have any of that sake.
No, but, you didn't.
Yes,
you
I was very well behaved.
You were.
But it was nice sake, the little tip that sip that I did have. Well, we're kind of covered on this, but what is one holiday destination you would love to go to if budget was not a limitation?
Oh, France, definitely. I would live there tomorrow.
Have you been before?
I've been twice before.
Oh, it is pretty stunning, isn't it?
It is.
Where in France?
Believe it or not, Paris. I actually love Paris. I've done a little bit of travelling around it, but I would ultimately love to go over there and just spend 6 weeks and travel and just do the whole country.
Maybe another one of the progeny might get you there for 6 weeks.
Yes. Yeah. Fingers crossed.
And if you had a barn or a stable full of horses, could only be by one sire, which horse would it be?
Daniel. I was very lucky enough to be with Arafil when Dane Hill was standing there, and he was just one of the most beautiful horses, a true gentleman, and as you can understand and see, the progeny that he produced.
And finally, Michelle, this segment is all about sharing success, whether it be 5 or 40. What would be one piece of advice you would give to someone who hasn't got involved yet but would like to in terms of, getting into the game?
Start small and build. Don't give up. Yeah, we've had some hard knocks. 2022, actually, believe it or not, was one of our worst years for myself breeding. We had a lot of trouble and problems and things happen, but just keep going. Get into the industry small and then build from there. That's how we did it, and look where we are now. Ultimately, it does take a few years, but that's where we've gotten.
I think that is really nice advice, and that's what this segment really is meant to, I guess, embody, is that you don't have to have 100% of 100 horses. You can have those small shares and end up with a $310,000 Extreme Choice colt.
Exactly.
Let's hope this time next year you've got a Bred of Magic Millions winner.
It would be lovely if we did. It really would.
Well, Michelle, thank you for joining us. It has been a whole lot of excitement this morning on the podcast deck, Tim.
It's great doing it live, Charmaine. I'm not sure we'll do it live every week, but it's worked out well.
It has. Michelle, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.